The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to the Guardian Football Weekly. No one is in crisis. Spurs win, so all is well. West Ham keep a clean sheet, so all is well. Manchester United don't win, but don't lose, so it's not a crisis. City are back after their European crisis, and Liverpool keep on winning. Burnley finally get 3 points, so that's the end of that crisis. In the Football League, a Leeds defeat and a glorious Villa volley. In Scotland, Celtic's worst start for years. And in Europe, a lot of VAR in Spain, goals galore in Germany, and a little bit of Hatem Ben Arfa. And in Football Weekly News, we become part of the baby delivering process. All that, your questions, feedback corner, and that's today's Guardian Football Weekly. On the panel today, James writes hashtag Phantom Breather Watch because there are three of the possible candidates for Breathing Gate. Myself, John Bruin, hello.
Hello.
Will you be breathing today?
Well, I do plan to live at the end of this, so yeah. I'm going to have to breathe. Yeah.
Okay, Barry Glendenning, hello.
Hi.
John says, could you ask Barry exactly how old he felt at the 21st birthday party he was at the other night?
Very old indeed.
Mm-hmm. But you were invited.
I was invited. I wasn't there for sinister reasons.
Good.
And I don't hang around with 21-year-olds. It was a friend's daughter.
Okay. Philippe Auclair, you've never been accused of breathing, so congratulations. No.
Maybe life.
It's true. Maybe today could be the day.
Maybe today will be the day.
All right. Very hard to say what the game of the weekend was. But it was quite a fun weekend of football, I thought. So let's begin by congratulating Liverpool for winning 6 out of 6. Everyone expected them to beat Southampton, but it's still mightily impressive, Philippe, isn't it?
Yeah, it is their best start, I think, since the 1990-1991 season. Which they were not champions that year, by the way. But yeah, what is even more impressive is the way that they seem to be winning games with a great deal of control at a canter, with a very solid defense, basically confirming every week what we've been saying, I think, from even before the season, that they would be among the contenders and a genuine contender this time.
And like luxury, Philip, they can take Shaqiri off at half time, they can sort of give Gomez and Van Dijk half a game each, Barry?
Yeah, strength and depth obviously is very important for them. I think people were a bit baffled by the withdrawal of Shaqiri at halftime, but Jurgen Klopp insisted, you know, that it wasn't, or it made sure he knew that it wasn't any sort of indictment on his performance, which was excellent, and it made for kind of a dull second half. But Liverpool had been winning games without playing particularly well. Now they're playing games while playing very well indeed. And I don't think Southampton are up to much, to be honest. I never even crossed my mind that Liverpool might do anything other than win.
You think as well that when Zeljko Buvac left the club, people thought, oh, this is going to be a real test of Jurgen Klopp as a manager, because Buvac is supposed to be the brains, the guy who, you know, conducts all the training sessions, the exercises, does the tactical setup, and they seem to be doing okay without him, don't they?
Last of the 92 with 100% record, John. Are they, as some people are now saying, are they genuine contenders?
Yeah, of course they are. I mean, before the season, if everyone expected Manchester City to win the title, the main challenger was expected to be Liverpool. They've kept their side of the bargain in that. I think that Buvac's question that Philippe raises is pertinent. I think there's a certain point where they haven't played that fluently, and people put that down to the assistants moving on. But I think we've seen that so many times, haven't we, where someone who is claimed to be the key, the man behind a club's success, moves on, and the club just rolls on without them. And as Barry said,
the James Richardson effect.
Yes, very much.
the Rui Faria effect.
Yes, exactly. Because Manchester United are a little worse than last season. Maybe Rui Faria was the power behind the throne. But I think Barry made a good point as well, which is that the strength in depth, if you can move players in like Shaqiri in and out of the team, as opposed to the bench in the Champions League final, which featured, I mean, I feel sorry for mentioning his name, but Dominic Solanke, then that's why Liverpool are going to be challenging for the title this season.
And Shaqiri is just he's a real pleasure of a footballer, Barry, isn't he? Not just because of his enormous calves, but that free kick was great, wasn't it?
Yeah, wonderful free kick. I think Salah eventually scored when it came down off the crossbar. Salah wasn't sure whether he'd scored or not. And, you know, one suspects he wouldn't have gone all Harry Kane on Shaqiri's ass if it had crossed the line. But, yeah, he's a great footballer. It's quite funny, actually, to see how many of the Stoke players from last season's, you know, dreadful, dreadful team have, you know, moved onwards and upwards and elsewhere. You know, we were expressing astonishment at seeing Chippo Moting lining up for PSG last week, but are coming on for them.
I'm still amazed about that.
Well, you know, why couldn't they do it last season? But yeah, Shaqiri, if they can keep him happy with enough game time, he's a great asset to the squad.
Yeah, they've got Chelsea in the Carabao, then Chelsea in the Premier League, then Napoli, both of those two are away, and then Man City at home. This is an exciting month for them.
Yes, and I think the way it's been presented as being the a month that they should be afraid of, I get the feeling that they're approaching it exactly the opposite way, as it is the month in which we can make real statements, both in Europe and at home. To go back to Shaqiri, what was interesting as well is that he used him as well as Mane, Firmino and Salah. And when perhaps you might have been expecting him to use him as to rotate, for example, to put him on the left side instead of Sadio Mane, but no, he decided to go with four genuine attackers. So, yeah, I mean, the Carabao Cup, we can forget about it because it's going to be the B-side, basically. And it's not going to be, God only knows, wouldn't it be nice? It's going to be the B-side of all
right.
B-sides.
I see.
And for the rest, it's, yeah, I mean, it's the other thing is that those games are at home, if I'm not mistaken. So the effect of
No, they're home to Chelsea.
Home to Chelsea.
And they're away to Chelsea, then away to Napoli.
But at home to Manchester
home to City. Yes.
Absolutely, which is, of course, the big one.
Yeah, I said in a month. It's actually in the space of 12 days. Goodness. We should say, Barry, Mark Hughes didn't moan after this game. He sort of said, yeah, it's a fair cop, Gov.
I'd like to think he had a moan at his players because they were, you know, you'd like to think they'd come out and surprise us, but I don't really get what's going on at Southampton. I don't get why Mark Hughes keeps getting jobs. I mean, he's probably quite a nice guy. I have no idea, but...
No.
Well, this is from Dan. No, you know, but we say he moans all the time, and he didn't moan. I think we should give him some credit. Dan did say, do you want to know how miserable and mean Mark Hughes is? My mum worked behind the bar in a South Manchester hotel in the mid-90s. Someone left a 50p tip on the bar, and Mark Hughes picked it up and pocketed it. Obviously, Mark is not here to defend himself, so it may be complete nonsense. John Brewin.
I once heard Mark Hughes, in the company of Keith Curl, who I believe is his next-door neighbour, tell a dirty joke in a pub. That I can't repeat, actually, on air. But so I'm not sure whether that makes him a bad person.
Maybe that's what Keith Curl likes, and he was just trying to be more friendly with.
Was it just banter?
Yeah, it wasn't anything too ribald. It was just a.
So we've gone from saying Mark Hughes isn't a very good football manager to he's a tip stealing peddler of filth in the Bernard Manning styley. I'm sorry, Mark. I wasn't expecting to go down this road.
And he might be. I've never met him. He might be lovely.
My dealings with him have been limited to press conferences, and I've never seen him steal change off anyone or tell a dirty joke, keeping it blue for the lads.
Gone full Roy Chubby Brown. We'll see him on stage with some Biggles goggles. We'll know he's really at rock bottom. Manchester United's won. Wolves won. Great to see Sir Alex in the stand looking so well. And it was a really good game, John, I thought.
Yes, yeah. The people most responsible for that were the visitors, Wolverhampton Wanderers, who are the division's entertainers, really. Jose Mourinho praised heavily Ruben Neves and Joao Moutinho. They just happen to share the same agent.
As about 90% of the Wolves squad.
Actually, Jose at Wolves. Could see that in the future, maybe one day. But anyway, moving on. I think that... it wasn't really a surprise that Wolves put in a performance against Manchester United. There had been talk of a revival, but when you look at the fixtures that Manchester United had before that, Young Boys, Burnley, so on, not the most difficult of fixtures. Reports,
young boys of Burnley.
Yes, young boys of Burnley, yeah. I mean, the talks of their revival were greatly exaggerated. And of course, in this morning's papers, on Monday's papers, we have this sort of culture war breaking out again between Jose Mourinho and Jose and Paul Pogba. And Paul Pogba has said, essentially hinted that he would like to play more attacking football, and it's not his fault, though Paul Pogba was responsible for the ball being given away. Indeed. From which Wolves scored.
He was also responsible for a lovely assist, to be fair to him. I thought that showed just an understanding and an awareness that a lot of people don't have on a football pitch. To bring that ball out of the sky and pass it inside to Fred, I thought was superb.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. But I think what we can say is that if a few weeks ago, Paul Pogba said in a post-match interview, "I can't say what I'd like to say," but now he feels like he thinks he can say it, what does that say about the manager's position?
I thought we weren't going to have a, Jose in crisis pod.
This was the un-crisis pod.
It's the non-crisis pod, but, it's a crisis for him and Mark Hughes so far.
It's not necessarily a crisis. It's just the state of being of Jose Mourinho at Manchester United.
Paul Pogba, he delivers occasionally for Manchester United. He, maybe that Wolves...
Sounds a bit like Jose Mourinho.
That game against Wolves, where his performance, sort of his Manchester career in microcosm, made the mistake that led to their goal, but a piece of individual brilliance provided the assist for Manchester United's. But is he contributing enough to be able to come out and say things like that and say how United should be playing? Because he hasn't done a huge amount to impress me. And he's certain the Manchester United version of Paul Pogba is a completely different animal to the French one that we saw at the World Cup.
Play. Yeah, I mean, I think that's right. Paul Pogba is someone who lives on his own reputation, which might be a little higher, and lives on his own standing. In the mix zone where that interview will have taken place, the fact that Paul Pogba wanted to speak to the journalist, that's telling in itself.
Which is very unusual, we should say.
Yes,
I mean, he's generally the absent man from the mix zone.
Yeah, he's normally got the headphones on at the very least, yeah. Mm. And the journalists would know that they want to speak to Pogba, and it's a big pull for them. It's a big story.
Interestingly, Didier Deschamps talked about Pogba as well, and because he was asked, he's in London for some kind of football do by FIFA, and he was asked about Paul Pogba, and he said he's not as individualistic as you think he is. So basically, very much came on the side of his player, which is to be expected, and said that he actually had been one of the main drivers, I would say, in the French coach, which this time didn't get stuck in Neisner, but went all the way to the final and won it. And then basically, well, Deschamps was telling Mourinho, I suppose, which is the way it's going to be presented, I'm sure, that my boy's all right. The problem might not be him.
Yeah, Ram says, on a scale of one to Mkhitaryan, how useless is World Cup fatigue-free Sanchez?
I tweeted about this on Saturday. I think of the post-Ferguson signings, he's heading on to be perhaps the grandest flop of all. I mean, Angel Di Maria is definitely in that wheelhouse. But
at least he started well, Di Maria.
He scored that lovely dink against Leicester.
They lost 5-3 in that game.
Yeah, right? Details.
Yes, yeah. But yes, I mean, he looks disinterested. He looks lost. He looks bolted onto the team. He looks very much what he was, a vanity signing by Manchester United, so City couldn't get him.
Arsenal 2, Everton 0. Philippe, you were there.
Yeah.
Arsenal a little bit fortunate to win?
I might not. That was very Jonathan Wilson, what I just did.
Mm, that's fine. He's a talented broadcaster and an excellent writer.
Indeed.
Why did you snigger, Barry?
Snickered.
That was me, sorry.
Stop the sniggering. I wouldn't say it was a lucky win, unless, you have the right to have a keeper who is on top of his game, as Petr Cech was. You have the right to play against an opponent who don't take their chances, and which is exactly what had happened against West Ham, by the way, for Arsenal. The first half, my goodness, West Ham should have been 2 or 3 ahead. Same thing with Everton. created by far the best chances, bar one. And then afterwards, you saw after the in the second half an improvement, which is very much on the line of what's happening with Unai Emery. It's that he's not making much of a fuss. Nobody's talking too much about it. But, you know, it's fifth win in a row for Arsenal and for him. And there were some moments. You can see what he wants them to do, but you can feel as well that they're a bit over-rehearsed, so to speak, on the training ground. Yes. They lack spontaneity. They lack a little bit of... I mean, some players are not at the at the correct level. I mean, Ozil had some moments, but not great. Aaron Ramsey also had a couple of moments, but disappeared for large chunks of the game. And on the other hand, what is really encouraging is the fact that they have got two genuine, very, very good goal scorers. Mm. And that it might be Aubameyang has got to play on the left much more than he would like to. But like I said, reminded us why he should be in the starting lineup
as well
as the Gabonese.
And they're fun, aren't they? They're fun. There's a nice interview with them after the game. They seem to
get on very, very well.
Off
yes.
the pitch as well.
Yeah, they get on very well.
On Petr Cech, I do wonder, 2 minutes in, someone played the ball back to him and he just lumped it upfield. In a sense, he's been freed.
To the acclaim of the whole stadium.
I know, he's been... But I wonder if that, you know, if you're having a bad game with your feet, that can affect what you do with your hands, because confidence, you're all part of the same body, right? So he's allowed to just lump it upfield.
So you're telling us that Petr Cech, basically, to gain confidence with other people, it would be a wonderful first touch and a great pass, for it's lumping it
exactly.
in the crowd.
I just wonder if that makes a difference to how he felt.
Well, he had a fantastic game and very much kept Arsenal in the game for the first half, and then once they were 2-0 up, I think he produced another good save. So it does seem odd that the new keeper hasn't, Leno hasn't been given a chance yet, but you couldn't possibly drop Cech on the
in the league
of yesterday's
he played in the Europa League and should achieve some really nice things in the Europa League game.
And when he played in that Europa League game, did he, you know, what was his footwork like? He's
oh, excellent. I mean, that was one of, it's quite obvious that he's a better distributor of the ball than Petr Cech is. But on the other hand, 36 years of age, I mean, we know Petr Cech looks after himself very well. He looked really like, the Petr Cech of Chelsea, for example.
Just a little coincidence. So Aubameyang's goal was obviously very offside indeed yesterday. And last February, he scored his first goal for Arsenal, which was also very offside indeed. Against Everton.
John?
I think the reason that goal was given was that the linesman couldn't believe what a mess Aaron Ramsey made of an open goal, pretty much, and just allowed it to pass.
Burnley 4, Bournemouth 0. Who predicted this? I didn't, Philippe.
Not me.
Barry?
No, I thought Bournemouth were absolutely nailed on to win this game.
John?
I wrote a tribute to Eddie Howe on Friday, so there you go.
Did you?
Yeah, well, just like what a great manager he is, and the kiss of death.
Did you write it with a pin on the wax statuette or something?
I always write that way.
Okay, all right. Yes.
So look, well done to Bournemouth. I think
to just, Burnley, you mean?
Yeah, sorry. Well done to Burnley. I think the thing that this game reminds you is it is early in the season and we've probably all made a lot of very bold claims about exactly what's going to happen, but we probably need to wait till May. I mean, we should continue to do podcasts, Barry, but we need to wait to find out.
Well, yeah, I mean, we all thought West Ham were doomed. They're now playing quite well. We all thought Burnley were absolutely doomed, and they pulled that performance out of the bag. I still think Huddersfield are doomed. I'm prepared to stand over that.
What about Cardiff City?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Aaron Lennon impressed, John, didn't he?
Yes, and that's good to see someone whose personal problems were, quite a big issue for them. He's found it. He's been slow going getting into the team at Burnley, but there's always been a talented player there. I mean, actually, if you think about Aaron Lennon, just how long he's been around. At the 2006 World Cup, he was probably England's best attacking player. Great to see.
Right, that'll do for part one. In part two, we'll start with Cardiff 0, Manchester City 5. Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly, which promises to be every bit as good as part one. On the 29th of November, Barry, we've got a live show at we also have a residency at the Emmanuel Centre in London. So if you've never been, come. And if you've been before, it'll be like going to your second home. Me, you, Wilson, and one more to be decided, to be picked from the incredible depth of squad we have, the Guardian live show performers.
Great. I'm looking forward to it.
Great. That's the sort of enthusiasm I was looking for. Please come and see Barry in real life. It's everything you could dream of and more. Cardiff City 0, Manchester City 5. Cardiff lost a home league game by a 5-goal margin for the first time since April 1994, when they lost 7-2 at home to Cambridge United. What a great day that was for football. It was a sort of quiet start, John. When City got going, you sort of just sort of felt it wasn't really fair.
No.
Which City?
Yes.
Careful.
Good
here.
Question. City, of course. Yeah. I think I've mentioned it before on this pod. I think Cardiff and Neil Warnock are a little bit too accepting of their fate in the Premier League this season. And it's something that Neil Warnock said after, you know, once when Mahrez scored his 2 goals, they're a little bit too compliant in those goals. I mean, it was 20 passes, I think, for the first goal that Mahrez scored. A little bit too easy for City. Neil Warnock is, of course, known for having sort of shifted his team selection around, thinking that he might not win a game. In this game, after a sort of aggressive start, as you might expect, they just came apart and decided they were going to lose the game. Not a good sign. I still think Neil Warnock, someone who I think is a good manager, has a record amount of promotions, just can't crack the Premier League code.
Although, hard to do it with his squad.
Yeah,
it?
Absolutely. But I think one of the reasons he hasn't cracked it is that he's never been granted the players. But he's not like Sam Allardyce or Tony Pulis, managers that moved up through the divisions, have the tactical rigidity, invention to stay up. He's a motivator, and has never really got to work with that level of players. I was looking at the players that he's worked with over the years. I think possibly the most talented would be probably someone like Phil Jagielka or what's the guy called at QPR?
Adel Taarabt.
Adel Taarabt, yeah, who's a hugely talented player, but
it's not two players you normally put together, is it? Jagielka and Taarabt.
Well, I think Jagielka is actually a more talented player than you might
probably
think, and was the best player in the Championship for several years. But what you've got is that Neil Warnock's never been given the tools, and that is the case now at Cardiff.
I mean, the danger is that he's, as you said, John, I mean, quite a few times already he said, well, it's not in this kind of games that we're going to get our survival. The problem is that you look at their schedule and you think, that's putting a lot of pressure on your players when you have Burnley next.
But do you think
home,
he's saying...
And then you were going to play against Tottenham at Tottenham, and you're going to play Liverpool in Liverpool.
Do you think what he's saying to, you know, because Barry, you've mentioned this, haven't you? He's very sort of amiable and happy at the moment, and it's kind of, this is what we're having, just a nice jolly old time.
Mm. Yeah.
And we're expecting a Warnock blow-up. But do you reckon if he keeps saying that to us, the players will start to feel that, or he might be saying something completely different to the players?
I don't know. I think it's hard to read too much into that match where, you know, City were always likely to give them a hiding, and, you know, I don't think City scored for, was it half an hour? Mm. Which... it's longer than I thought they would take, and it could have been worse for Cardiff because they should have had a man sent off, Joe Rawls, for a challenge on Gundogan, which should definitely have been a red card, so he dodged a bullet there. But I was trying to think, what are you going to say about a game like that? But
what you can say is that they were undone by goals of absolutely outstanding quality.
Gundogan's goal was lovely.
You could say, okay, partly down, perhaps not concentrating enough in defence, this and this and that, but the finishes were absolutely... Yeah. And the one Bernardo Silva, the header, is just beauty.
Impudent, you could call it.
Yeah, and clever, intelligent, vivacious, imaginative,
everything. He's a lovely player.
Lovely player.
How good is Gundogan? I was watching Match of the Day and I took a note going, how good is he, just before he scored that brilliant goal? I just can't work out, if he wasn't at City, would he be starting in any other Premier League team?
He was, I'm not talking about club football, but definitely at international level, when he got his injury, it was a genuine prem for Jogilov, who saw in him one of the absolute keys of his team. Yeah. That is high praise indeed.
Fair enough.
I think the thing is, though, that with Manchester City, the player that they find to be irreplaceable is Fernandinho, who's starting to creak a little bit with age. maybe the Gundogan that we saw at Borussia Dortmund, who was maybe had a bit more energy, a bit less fragile, might have been that player. But since he's had his injury, he's developed into a slightly different player.
Yeah. Brighton 1, Spurs 2. The crisis is over, Barry.
Yeah, Spurs 1. Harry Kane scored from the spot. And crisis averted.
Yeah, Kane looked sharper in this game than I thought he has. You're not sure, Philippe?
No. He did. What puzzles me a little bit is more Brighton. Is again, it's what they had, I think, at the opening day of the season. They turned up on the pitch, but they seemed very apathetic. And they were not really getting into them as much as you would have imagined them to do, which is exactly what happened on the opening day of the season, and they paid for it. And you would have thought Tottenham, in the state that we thought they were in, after seeing them against Liverpool, where they looked honestly a bit tired and lacking spontaneity again, you would have expected Brighton perhaps to be a bit more proactive,
yeah,
which they were not, and they, you know, Tottenham grew into the game, and in the end, it was a very decent performance.
Yeah, I think Danny Murphy picked it out on Match of the Day, didn't he? The sort of first minute where, especially because Spurs had their third keeper, who's not really played that
Zaniga,
much.
Yeah.
And he got about five touches of the ball, and Spurs kept the ball for a while. Eric Lamela came on and did well. I wonder if at what point he gets a start for Spurs.
Well, yeah, I mean, Lamela has been on that road back to fitness for in back into the team. I mean, I think it was at the end of November last year when he made his way back in after such a long time out, having been such a mainstay in Poch's initial spell at the club at the start of his time there. I suppose the problem for Lamela is that Spurs have got better players around them. But he's a talented player, and another player who has changed his game over the years. Because remember, he arrived in English football as this flight of fancy, you know, fantasista type of player. But he's a worker, a worker beaner.
Part of the problem is the fact that the system he's playing at the moment, Pochettino, makes Lucas Moura very much a second striker. Therefore, it's more difficult to find a place for Eric Lamela in that.
It's worth saying that Spurs did win, and they were better than Brighton, but I mean, they were panicking at the end, weren't they?
Yeah, Brighton could easily have rescued a point. Anthony Knockhart scored deep in injury time, and then probably should have scored a second, and just loft the ball straight at the keeper. And nice to see Knockhart sort of back playing quite well. You know, I think he said last week that he had a tough time last season. Thank Brighton fans for their patience. He was suffering from depression because his dad died, and then his marriage broke up at two pretty traumatic events in quick succession. So good to see. He is a good player, and it's good to see him back.
Leicester 3, Huddersfield 1. Are we all fully paid up members of the James Maddison fan club? He was excellent at Norwich last year in a team that weren't very good. He pulls the strings for Leicester, and it was a great free kick as well, John.
Yeah, playing it off the left, though, in this game, which, you know, Claude is trying to shift his pack around. Boring Claude is actually playing, his team are actually playing quite exciting football now. But Maddison, that free kick, bit of a sort of David Beckham-style whip on it. You know, reasonably close range, whip, bend. And I've seen a couple of people say that the Huddersfield goalkeeper, Lussell, could have saved it. But I'm sorry, they can't be goalkeepers because it was unsavable, really.
Yeah, he did well to get a hand to it.
Yeah, that's what I thought, yeah.
And he had another excellent free kick in the game, which is obviously overshadowed by that, but it was the one where he training ground moved, dinked it over, and Vardy leathered it wide, and that would have been a peach of a goal if Vardy hadn't made a pig's ear of it.
Sorry, yes, I was going to say the only question mark, perhaps. I mean, he looks like a very assured young man.
Yes.
And maybe a bit too assured. Apparently, he had a bit of a big head when
You think he's going to go down the fast cars?
No, it's not that. It's more a question that he's a very special talent, and he knows it, and that's absolutely fine. And I was told that when he went on loan to Aberdeen, and they certainly talked to him there, I said, you know, you've got to concentrate. And apparently, the message filtered to the player, which is how he came back from Aberdeen to become this player with Norwich in the Championship. And looking like a player who... you build the team around, which is quite extraordinary for somebody who's coming straight from the Championship.
Yeah, absolutely.
Very encouraging. I mean, he's a lovely talent.
Great finish from Vardy for his goal as well. Huddersfield, no win yet. Fulham won, Watford won. This was a good game. Philippe, you were there.
Yep, I was there. John too.
Oh, you were there, John?
Yes, yes.
Oh, Barry, I think we weren't there.
No, we weren't.
I think we genuinely enjoyed it.
Great game, yeah.
I'm not sure it actually made sense, some of it, but we really, really enjoyed it.
What didn't make sense?
I think of Fulham's first half, what didn't make sense at all. Yeah. And you had to feel... I mean, I spent the first quarter of an hour trying to understand... how Fulham were organized in defense. I'm doing the bunny ears thing. And I decided then after 15 minutes that there was no organization, so that was not worth... I mean, poor McDonald. I mean, he...
Yeah, he was overrun.
He was overrun. He didn't know where to position himself because they were playing... Mawson, excuse me, the two central defenders were playing like 40, 50, 60 yards aside, almost like like fullbacks. And McDonald was supposed to come back and be the third centre-back, and he obviously was lost. He didn't quite know where... I don't know if it's the prime with Jokanovic, didn't quite rehearse that well enough in training, or if McDonald had, you know, the heebie-jeebies when he came onto the pitch, but it just didn't work, and they were cutting through them. But very impressively, Watford were really superb in the first half.
Yeah, I saw why they've been so impressive from the start of the season. I think the thing is, in the second half, once Jokanovic made some changes, yeah. Fulham came on strongly, and Watford did look tired, actually. What you would say is, though, that Fulham are going to be an entertaining team to watch all season. Seri, once he got into the game, was really very good. Sessegnon down the left.
Schürrle had some lovely touches as well.
I thought Schürrle was the best player on the park, absolutely excellent. And then Mitrovic just always lifts the fans when he gets on the go and could have won the game. It actually really was a very good game.
I like that stat in the paper that Andre Gray at 5'10" is the only player under 6 foot to be in this Watford side, you know, this side that they pick week in, week out.
Yes, well, it was me that actually found that stat.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Did you? I mean, I really hope you took a tape measure into the Watford dressing room.
Well, but do you know the reason that we did that was because it was a few of us talking about the fact that Will Hughes for Watford, who looks in their team like a sort of small little Paul Scholes-esque playmaker, but he's actually 6'1". So they're just a very big team.
And perhaps showing a little bit of tiredness because they haven't rotated at all. Well, they're so starting 11 in six games.
They're so tall that they have less oxygen and and it takes more effort for each of their legs to move, doesn't it? West Ham nil. Sorry, Barry.
Jokanovic made an interesting comment after the game. He said, because he hooked McDonald and Mawson at half time.
Yes.
And said he would have taken off four players. if he could have. So it was a bizarre defensive performance. And Mawson was hideously bad as well in that first half. But
he's a terrific defender. He's an excellent player.
And the thing is with Mawson, if things had gone a little bit differently last season, he could have been Harry Maguire, you know, at the World Cup, because he was in line to be that player for Gareth Southgate. But... yes, it was a definitely forgettable Saturday for him.
And Chambers wasn't that great either, by the way, in the first half.
Luke says, would you rather be stuck in a lift with Barney Ronay explaining to you just which individual accolades he finds pointless and why, or sit through West Ham v Chelsea all over again, Barry?
I'd quite enjoy the Ronay lift experience, I have to say. I don't want to watch West Ham-Chelsea again. It was a good performance from West Ham, who should have won the game with a quite horrendous miss.
There is a brilliant photo in the paper of Yarmolenko with his hands on his head, and a big portion of the London Stadium also with their hands on their heads. Yes, well, he's got to hit the target, hasn't he, Philly?
Yeah, no, it was ridiculous. I must say, I only saw bits and bobs and bits and pieces of that particular game, but I was surprised by what Sarri talked about the pace of the passing, as if it were the main problem that Chelsea had. The main problem surely has to be also the fact that how many goals have Giroud and Morata scored now?
Good
in
question. Is it naught?
One, I think.
Okay.
I think Morata scored early on in the season, and that's it.
Jorginho did get a record of 180 passes, the most passes completed ever in the Premier League by some distance as well.
Is it a record that he's already broken, by the way?
Who broke it?
Jorginho. I mean, he had already broken it.
Before. Oh, really?
Yeah,
had he?
I think it was already his record.
Is it like those training drills where you have
I think it was Ilke Gundogan's record.
Was it Ilke
Gundogan? 165. So he's broken it by 15. You mentioned Barney there. Barney had a great thing. You know, he was sort of pointing out that he'd broken this record, but, you know, that's all well and good. But if you don't score and you don't win the game, it's not really much point. And he said, he described Jorginho Ball with the feeling by the end of having spent an entire game watching someone knitting a jumper, incubating an egg or whittling a stick.
It reminds me a little of early Brendan Rodgers at Liverpool. Do you remember when they just passed, and, you know, the joke was they won the passing? One thing I will mention, friends of mine were saying this, is Sarri the least stylish Italian manager to have been in the Premier League?
Oh, good question. I mean, he certainly isn't style. He is just any old T-shirt from the third drawer, isn't he, really?
Yeah.
You know, it's like an old sports T-shirt.
He looks like he's going to go and do some painting or something like that.
Or just going to walk straight into a bookies. And then I'm trying to think of other Italian. Well, obviously, you know, I mean, Mancini had
Mancini's
style.
Mancini's the king, yeah.
Didn't he?
Carlo, pretty stylish.
Mazzari wasn't that stylish. Was it? I mean, he was certainly more stylish than...
Oh, Mazzari had a very expensive suit.
Oh, that is, okay, okay.
Claudio was really smart. Yeah.
Well, they're all suits, aren't they?
Vialli was very smart. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. He's letting, you know, he's breaking ranks with the cliche, frankly, isn't he?
Yeah, so it's Dolce Gabbana and he's like TK Maxx.
Palace 0, Newcastle 0. By all accounts, not an interesting game, Barry.
Yes, but did feature another hideous miss by Mamadou Sakho, and it was sort of a toss-up between him and Yarmolenko over whose was worse.
Sakho's is worse.
I think Sakho's is worse.
Because there's no defender anywhere near him. At least the ball sort of comes past Alonso. But Sakho must have closed his eyes. I'm just convinced he closed his eyes.
I don't know.
Is there anything else to pick up from this game? There's always an inquest now whenever Zaha gets tackled or fouled. And he got tackled quite firmly, and then he went to have a nice chat with the linesman about it.
Well, wasn't there some sort of post-match comments from Roy Hodgson about Zaha, which was sort of saying, you know, after the stuff that he said this week, and, you know, it was weird. I think Zaha played, he probably wasn't fit enough to play, but he did seem to be almost Hodgson challenging Zaha to play better and to stop complaining about being a target.
Very much so.
Paul says, as a Newcastle fan, can someone please reassure me that Salomon Rondon is a good player and not an overweight, unfit lump? Benitez spent the whole summer pursuing him, but already seems to be defaulting back to Joselu, which is a scary prospect. Can anybody help Paul?
I remember watching a game West Brom played last season. I was in a pub with some mates, and the topic of discussion came up, what is Salomon Rondon for? And about 5 minutes after we'd finished the conversation, having not reached any concrete conclusions, he scored a great goal and made us look quite foolish. But again, you can't fault his work rate. He works very, very hard. But, you know, you could put me up front for Newcastle. I would work very, very hard. I would do my best.
Would you work hard?
I would work hard. But I would be very ineffective, and the fans would not warm to me in any way.
I'd love to get when Paul sends a tweet going, can you somebody tell me what's the point of Barry Glenn? What's Barry Glendening for? He doesn't deserve the famous number 9 shirt. Yeah. They're not singing his name at the Gallagher.
So, but you know, he's in a bad team, and there's only so much he can do. But I'm not convinced by him as a player. I was surprised when Benitez went for him, but then it's going to be hard to attract players to Newcastle, isn't it?
So what is strange is that he used to be a regular goal scorer. He never was 25-30 goals a season, but if you look at his club career, when he was in Spain with Las Palmas or Malaga, when he was with Zenit, which is not, you know, a little team, he was scoring one every three games, which I think Newcastle fans would be very happy with at the moment. Yeah. And for some reason, no, it's just not happening.
Football League time. Now only two teams are unbeaten. Portsmouth in League One and Forest Green in League Two. That's because Leeds United were beaten at home by Gary Monk's Birmingham City. They are still top of the Championship, joint with Middlesbrough, who were held to a goalless draw at home to Swansea. West Brom third after a 2-0 win at home to Millwall, who were in the bottom three, 1 point above Preston and Ipswich. Nathan says, John McGinnadine Zidane just scored the goal of the season, right? I mean, this is absolutely glorious volley from John McGinn in a 2-1 defeat to Sheffield Wednesday, which takes the edge off it, perhaps, but... There's a camera angle behind the goal where you can see he strikes. It comes out. It's Scholes-esque, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it goes in off the bar, Yeboah-esque. And it's, I mean, I don't
know. You know what I'm going to say, Max.
What are you going to say, Barry?
He shinned it.
I don't think he did.
It went in off his shin. Shinned it.
Well, frankly, then, the shin of McGinn is, frankly, quite exceptional.
Many, many spectacular volleys are scored with the shin. Robin van Persie, the famous volley, you know, the kind of scissor kick in full flight, that's a shinner.
I am not in any way trying to disparage McGinn and his shin, but it kind of takes away from the absolute magnificence of the goal. When I think it was about the fourth time I'd watched it, I went, oh, God, that wasn't off his foot.
Producer Jonathan says, incredible curl off his shin. Maybe he has predators attached to his to his shins. Rooney's overhead kick was a shin, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yep, it was.
So, yeah, well done, John McGinn. George says, which Tony Yeboah goal is better, the one against Wimbledon or the one against Liverpool? I prefer the latter. It was 23 years ago yesterday since his one against Wimbledon. Sorry, Philippe, to just remind you how old you are.
I feel a bit like Barry when he went to the party.
The one against Liverpool because it went on off the bar, for me. For me, Brian, it's that one. John?
The Wimbledon one's good just because it sort of... follows that sort of slightly bustling run and then just total smash.
Yeah. In League One, Barnsley Burton was postponed after long-serving Barnsley volunteer Stephen Croft suffered a heart attack shortly before kickoff. He had to be airlifted to hospital. The club have announced his condition is stable but serious, so best wishes from all of us to Mr. Croft. Portsmouth still unbeaten, but their 2-2 draw with Wickham means Peterborough have jumped above them. Disappointingly, obviously. Posh won 4-2 at Gillingham, who are in the bottom four along with Bradford, Oxford and Plymouth. The most fun story from League One was at Accrington Stanley, where one fan left his false teeth at the ground. The club tweeted out, "Are these your false teeth?" I don't have false teeth, but I thought if you had false teeth, you'd notice you didn't have them in when you left a football match. But maybe he didn't. Producer Jonathan suggests they were potentially knocked out when celebrating a goal. I mean, that's possible.
Hmm.
But then you'd be like, you'd spend the next 5 minutes going, has anyone got my teeth? I don't have my teeth.
Maybe they didn't understand them.
Anyway, if anyone with dentures is not offended so much that they're prepared to tell us how this could come about, please let us know. In League Two, Forest Green might be unbeaten, but they've drawn 6 of their 9 games. Lincoln lead the way after a 2-1 win over MK Dons, closely followed by Exeter and Newport, who both won. Notts County move off the bottom after drawing with Northampton. Macclesfield are at the bottom of the Football League. And thank you, George Maris, for scoring with 2 minutes left to give Cambridge a point at home to Mansfield. The U's now just 14 points off top spot. Andrew writes, if George Maris and Matt Piper produced footballing offspring, would the child be the first player to share their surname with a variety of potato? It's a very good question. There must be Phil King. There must be someone Edwards.
It's like it's Edward King or something. Mm, yeah.
There must be that, yeah. Anyway, I can't think of any other makes of potato.
Jersey Royals, Maris Piper.
Joe Royals, yeah.
There we go. Anyway, you can do better than we can. Fit bar, Barry. Celtic struggling.
Celtic are struggling. They lost against Kilmarnock yesterday 2-1. A late goal in added time from Stuart Finlay means it's now Celtic's worst start in the Scottish Premier League for 20 years. Brendan Rodgers, upon being asked if fans should be worried, said yes, they should, and it was which is probably not quite what they were expecting to hear, but there's something weird. Brendan Rodgers didn't get the funds he wanted and the players he wanted during the summer, couldn't shore up the defence, and you could argue led to them being eliminated from the Champions League qualifying. I still think they probably should have had enough about them to get through anyway, but there is a theory doing the rounds that Brendan Rodgers is trying to sort of organise an exit strategy for himself that he's perhaps not wholly committed to the club, and maybe this is seeping through to the players who aren't delivering the goods for them. And meanwhile, across the city, Rangers registered their biggest win under Steven Gerrard. They beat St. Johnstone 5-1. Bookies have now slashed their odds on them winning the title. But top of the pile is Hearts, who dropped their first points of the season after being held to a goalless draw by Livingston. Craig Levein was back in the dugout after his recent heart scare. He had a spell in hospital. And Stephen Naismith missed a penalty that probably would have given Hearts all 3 points. And down the bottom of the table, Dundee, rock bottom with no points. They lost 3-0 to Hibs, and Neil McCann, their manager, is facing the axe, I think. They have a very big game coming up against the Ackies, and whether or not he'll be in the dugout for that crucial tie, crucial sort of six-pointer, remains to be seen.
Could it be argued that the title race in Scotland will be more interesting than the title race in England? I mean, it depends, obviously, what happens in both leagues, but at the moment, there's an argument to say that.
Well, it looks like it's very early days yet, but it looks like there might be a title race in Scotland, which there hasn't been for quite some time. And people are saying Liverpool may give Manchester City a run for their money. I'm not convinced they will, but yeah, who knows?
And when Roger talked about the fans being very worried and being right to be worried, it's not just on the pitch that there has to be a worry. An awful lot of Celtic's turnover has been because of the Champions League, which in turn gives them an economic advantage over the competition in Scotland. This is not going to be the case this season. You know, even if they do well in the Europa League, it's not going to be the same. So if you've got problems on the pitch as well as restrictions on revenue, that's not exactly a very good combination.
I mean, yeah, I mean, part of the Rangers' plan, such as it was that there would be one season when Celtic didn't make it into the Champions League, and that could be when they could catch up. That's maybe happened a little bit quicker than they might have expected. I think the thing is with Brendan arrived with Celtic of, you know, creating himself as a legend in that sort of statesman-like fashion that he favours. And he was going to go for 10 in a row, which has not been done. Both those two teams have done 9 in a row, Rangers and Celtic, and he was going for 10 in a row. But if he stops at 8, despite going an entire season and unbeaten and doing a double-double, is it a double-treble?
Double-treble, yeah.
He's going to be remembered as the manager that didn't win 10. You know, it's...
Yeah.
That's the problem with managing Celtic. You have to win everything.
Everything all the time. Yeah. That'll do for part two. And part three, we'll start with Sid in Spain. Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly. Let's go straight to Spain and say hello to Sid Lowe. Hello, Sid Lowe.
Hello, how are you?
Yeah, very good, thank you. How are you?
Not too bad, thanks.
Marvellous. Shock draw for Barcelona. 1-0 up against Girona. And then a VAR sending off.
Yeah, and it seems to me that there's been a sort of a slight missing of the point with this. In that what happened was that there was a clash between Pere Pons and Lenglet. Pons made the foul. In fact, Pons apologised to Lenglet for the challenge that he'd made. And then the VAR intervened, and the VAR saw that Lenglet had kind of brought his elbow through. Now, I must admit, you know, you watch it again, and it's difficult to know whether it's deliberate. It's difficult to know whether it's a consequence of the clash itself. In other words, whether because he's fouled and put off balance, that's what makes the elbow come through and catch Pere Pons. But the elbow is in a very, very strange position. And so Barcelona's players, and in fact the manager was saying afterwards, you know, this must be the first time ever that a player apologises for a foul. And it turns out it's the other player who's been fouled who gets sent off, which of course... That part of it is true, but if the video evidence suggests that there's an elbow thrown through as part of it, then of course, you know, you can still have a foul and have someone sent off Assault's not really the right word, is it? But I suppose assault is kind of what they call it in Spanish, an aggression.
It's a definite definite elbow for me, I've got to say.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. I must admit, when I first saw it back, I wasn't sure at full speed because I wasn't sure if he's off balance and he's following through. But then when you see it slowed down, and this is the risk, I suppose, because when you slow it down, you're actually making it unnatural. You're making everything look deliberate and more thought through. But the position of the elbow is very weird. And I don't think natural. So I think in that sense, it's perfectly plausible that you give a red card for it. I think it's perfectly justified that you give a red card for it. And to suggest that, well, the foul was from the other player sort of isn't really the point. Anyway, the VAR intervened. Lenglet was sent off. And then Barcelona conceded with during that sort of brief 5-6 minute period when Busquets was at centre back. They then conceded again in the second half for 2-2 draw. I actually thought, funny enough, Barcelona played really quite well considering they were down to 10 men. There wasn't a huge amount wrong with what they did. Messi was brilliant again. Coutinho came and made a real difference as he's been doing for most of this season. But yeah, 2 points dropped for them. And of course, this has fed back into that kind of debate about the VAR anyway. And also, as usual, as you can imagine, fed back in according to the side that people are on. So in Barcelona, the two main sports papers there are saying that, you know, this was a totally unjust red card. In Madrid, they're saying this was entirely just and this shows that VAR works. And I suppose it shows you that there's always going to be arguments, even with a system, which is, I don't think there's any doubt about this, reducing the number of bad decisions this season. Admittedly, there are question marks about what it means in terms of the overall kind of flow of the game, the way that players behave and so on. But it feels to me, at least, like an improvement.
Alaves smashed Rayo Vallecano on Saturday 5-1. Vallecano midfielder made history, becoming the first player to be sent off thanks to the robot snitch VAR in La Liga. What does that even mean?
Well, basically, it was quite bizarre. So I was at Vallecas for this game, and bizarrely enough, they lost 5-1, but they actually played really, really well until this sending off. I think Alaves were 1-0 up, then it was 1-1. Rayo had much more of the ball, much more of the chances. Then Alaves scored to make it 2-1, a brilliant goal from Ibai Gomez, it's impossible to say his name and not think in Yorkshire. He scores this great goal, and then the referee goes to look at the VAR. And you think, wow, it's going to be ruled out for something. Anyway, it turns out that not only does he give the goal, but he sees that in the shot, there's a Rayo player, Bar, who throws an elbow. It looks very, very, well, it's kind of a forearm, looks very, very deliberate, and gets sent off. So it's entirely the right decision, a completely bizarre thing to do. And this comes back to what I was saying just now about one of the things that is to be seen, still to be seen, really, is how the VAR changes the way that players behave. And one of the things that you would think it would do with time would be stop players diving and stop players doing ridiculous off-the-ball assaults like this, because, of course, you're going to get caught out.
Atletico beat Getafe 2-0, their fifth, 5 points off the top. And Real, given the only goal of the game in their match against Espanyol, by VAR as well.
Yes, so the goal was scored, everyone celebrates, then the referee says, hang on, I'm going to check this. And then he checked it having... Well, this is the thing. The way it's been presented is he checks it having ruled it out, and then he gets overruled by the VAR. I'm not 100% sure if he rules it out because he rules it out, or if he rules it out because, and I think this is something a lot of referees are doing with VAR, he rules it out because he knows there's always this kind of second chance.
Yeah.
In other words, you don't just give it, you go and check. And so I'm not 100% sure if he actually rules it out, or if he says, right, that's a goal, but let me go and check to see if it's a goal. Or it might not be a goal, but one way or the other, we're going to check. Anyway, the bottom line is that justice was done. The goal was given. It was a bit weird. It got celebrated twice. And this referee, Matteo Loff, who is the one that Mourinho praised a few years ago, and there was a kind of a brief period where everyone said, oh, he's great because he lets the game go. And with time, everyone's decided he's not great because he lets the game go all the time. And he seems to have his own set of rules. And it hasn't gone unnoticed that so far this season, he is the referee in Spain whose decisions have been corrected the most times.
Oh, I love that. It just lets it flow. He'd be terrible on a Sunday league bloodbath. Lots of organisational strife in Spain at the moment, Sid. The games are... It's too hot when some games are playing. There's disagreements over this game in Miami. And a great quote from Joris Evers, Global Communications Officer for La Liga, who said, "We're building our global brand, moving forwards and changing from being a football regulator into an entertainment provider," which is what every football fan wants to hear, isn't it?
well, quite. I mean, this confrontation now between Rubiales, the president of the federation, and Javier Tebas, the president of the league, is getting incredibly petty now. They were very, very hot well, it was actually very hot in Vallecas, where I was, and pretty hot in Getafe as well. But in particular, it was very hot in Valencia, where Levante were beaten by Sevilla, and in Villarreal, which is about 50 minutes up the coast, where the Valencian community derby was played between Villarreal and Valencia. And I think it's 14 people seen by medical staff at the Villarreal game and 7 at the Levante game, although it might be the other way around. And the president of the federation made the most of this to say, look, we've got to do something about these timetables. He showed a photograph of a woman lying down with a drip being placed on her and being treated by medical staff. And he said, this, you know, we need to do something about this. And this is part of his decision or his claim that he's going to try and take back control of controlling the kickoff times in the league. He says it goes beyond just the you know, the heat and so on to things like the fact that this game's on Monday and Friday. Spain's the only league in Europe with 4 different days over a weekend. It's the only league in Europe where there's 10 different time slots for matches. And Rubiales is now trying to challenge this as president of the federation, and he can get this power back in 2019 because it's a power that the federation seeds to the league. This has caused a backlash because, of course, these two are fighting over the Miami game as well. And it's getting very, 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 very petty. Tebas yesterday said Rubiales' big thing really is he desperately needs money. He's basically asked everyone except the Pope for money, and he just wants the money for this. And it's getting really, really, really silly. And it seems to me that the best plan for this is that these two to fuck off to Miami and leave the rest of us alone.
Hey, Sid, have a lovely afternoon.
I will try. Cheerio.
Sid Lowe out in Spain. Let's go from Sid to Germany, to Cologne and Lucas Podolski's kebab shop, where Archie Rintutt is standing by.
Hello from the kebab shop, where this weekend the 4 Champions League teams faced off. Firstly, Hoffenheim against Dortmund, finished 1-1. Christian Pulisic equalising for Dortmund late on after they'd had defender Abdou Diallo sent off. But noteworthy for Hoffenheim striker Ishak Belfodil's miss of the season contender, firing over from about 3 yards out in the final seconds. Then you had Schalke against Bayern, second against first from last season, where Bayern maintained a 100% record across all competitions, that is too, with a 2-0 win, James Rodriguez and Robert Lewandowski on target. Schalke, meanwhile, rock bottom on no points. An English week, as they say in Germany, coming up in the Bundesliga. Bayern at home to Augsburg on Tuesday, whose coach Manuel Baum was actually close to tears in his post-match interview on Saturday, as he sympathised with his goalkeeper Fabian Giefer. So for the second week running, Giefer made a mistake. Last weekend at fault for both of Mainz's goals as Augsburg lost 2-1, and this week he let one through his legs, allowing former Everton midfielder Davy Klaassen to score his first goal for Werder Bremen. They win 3-2, but disaster, of course, for Giefer. Now, Baum emotionally pointing out that sure, Giefer made a mistake, but also there's a human being in goal for them. Elsewhere then, Leverkusen picked up their first win of the season at home to Mainz on Sunday. 19-year-old Kai Havertz made his Germany debut earlier in the month with the winner for them. But the team closest to Bayern at the top of the table are Hertha on 10 points after a 4-2 win at home to Gladbach. A word for Javier Dilrosson left Manchester City this summer, setting up 3 of Hertha's 4 goals on Saturday afternoon. Dip into the second division briefly for Hamburg. Oh, Hamburg. They'd been doing well, could have stayed top of the division on Sunday, but instead they lost 5-0 at home to Jan Regensburg. Look out for Julian Polisbeck, their goalkeeper's mistake, trying to dribble out from the back for the first goal. It didn't end well. Finally, decision on Thursday as to who will host Euro 2024, either Germany or Turkey. Every Bundesliga club this weekend standing in front of a banner supporting that bid before the game. But almost every single set of ultras in the Bundesliga held up a sign contradicting that, saying united by money, the German FA and UEFA. The ultras accusing the authorities of corruption.
Thank you, Archie, for that. Nice to see Hertha Berlin doing well. I used to watch them when I lived in Germany, Barry, with Brian Roy in the Olympic Stadium.
Was that where you lived in Germany?
I went there at the start of my gap year. 3 Deutschmarks to get in. Back in the day, Anyway, thanks, Archie. Italy now, Serie A. Juve is still top with a 100% record, 5 out of 5. They beat Frosinone 2-0. Cristiano Ronaldo opening the scoring with 10 minutes to go. Frosinone with only a single point from their first 5. Business as usual there. Then Napoli beat Torino 3-1 with some fun goals. Simone Verde is finishing off a lovely move. Insigne getting one either side of that. The first a banger into the top of the net. The second rebounding off one post and then coming back and then being buried in off the other. Third, fourth and fifth, Fiorentina. Surprise package, Sassuolo and Lazio, who all won. Milan conceded a 91st minute equaliser against Atalanta to keep up their mixed start to the season. They're on 5 points, same as Roma, who fell 2-0 to Bologna. The first 2 goals Bologna have scored this season. So well done to them. Bolognese all round. should be a sort of balsamic vinegar all round. Well, that's moderner, but it's close to Bologna anyway. France, Philippe.
Oui.
We'll go live to your boulangerie. bring us up to speed. The Renaissance of Hatem Ben Arfa.
Well, that's. I mean, even though, I mean, it's when I said the Renaissance, is that he's just putting his head above the parapet again after spending 533 days away from a football pitch, and that is a football pitch where a first team was playing, and he's reappeared. Yes. And he reappeared in quite dramatic fashion in a game against Jablonec, the Czech side in the Europa League. That is for Rennes, by the way, in case you have lost the whereabouts of Hatem Ben Arfa, which quite a few people have, I think, over the last year and a half.
I have a special camera focused on Ben Arfa at all times.
The Ben Cam, the yes. Hatem Cam.
I can't think of a better pun.
Whatever.
And, I have half a dozen cameras on him.
Oh, excellent. yes, keep going at him.
No, I'm done.
And he scored in added time to give the victory to Rennes, which is good. And
what kind of goal was it?
It was a penalty. Okay, all right, I know.
A Hatemic bomb.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, wow. Gracious me. I'm pleased mine wasn't the worst. Thanks, Barry.
But anyway, he's back. And it's big news. I mean, it might seem crazy that, you know, he could do the front page of L'Equipe on the day after he scored a penalty kick in a team against a team that nobody knows. But that's how big he is for a number of people. And because it's a mystery, you know, you think back not that long ago when he was with Nice, scored 17 goals in a season, was back to his absolute best with Claude Puel, by the way, in case Leicester is interested in a player in the not too distant future. And then went to PSG, and Unai Emery decided, no, don't want you. Your attitude is not correct. You're not exactly what I'm looking for. And he didn't play at all. Now he's back. The umpteenth attempt to revive his career. And he seems to be in a good place at the moment. He's a lovely boy, by all means, and by all estimations. He's a lovely footballer, too. It just hasn't never worked for him. He's only found his real place, you know, as I said, with Nice and perhaps a couple of seasons before that. But he's a great talent. He was supposed to be the absolute world beater in the famous 1987 generation, you know, with Benzema, Nasri and the others. Nasri, I've just said Nasri. Where are you? Is he these days? Sorry, it's just like...
Is he suspended?
He was banned for
For his little...
clinic that he attended.
Yeah, that's
his
right.
His clinical yes. fun.
Anyway, that's at him back. But the other news is Lyon, really, who have had a very good last few days. You might be aware that they came to England and they saw when they conquered City. And this weekend they had another big test against Olympique de Marseille. And they hadn't been doing great in Ligue 1 so far, but suddenly goals are flowing. 1-4-2, and deservedly so. It's not a fluky score. A couple of very decent goals by Traoré. Fekir again on the team sheet on the score sheet, and Lyon up to 6th and looking very good indeed.
Nasri was given a 6-month ban. Mm-hmm. Was extended by 12 months in August following an appeal from FIFA. He was last seen playing for Antalyaspor in Turkey. So,
yeah,
we don't know if he's still in Turkey, but that's some Samir Nasri news. A big old hoo-ha about the TV station that got the rights to the Liverpool PSG game.
Yeah, what an absolute mess. Yeah, big hoo-ha in France about what happened when the new... broadcaster of the Champions League and the Europa League. They've paid 300 million euros for this privilege. Basically, they were not ready, technically speaking, and people subscribed to the new channel and new system only when they tried to watch it to have a black screen. And so it means that hardly anybody has seen what was supposed to be the most interesting game of this group in the Champions League. So you can imagine it's, you know, it hasn't gone down too well. And it is to be hoped that problems are going to be sorted out soon, because 300 million euros for a dark screen and people cancelling the subscription is not a good idea.
Thank you, Philippe. In the Women's Super League, incredible bravery from the England captain, Steph Houghton, to even be on the pitch. Last week, we mentioned her husband, the Bolton fullback, Stephen Darby, had been diagnosed with motor neuron disease and obviously had to retire. She scored a last-minute equaliser as Man City women salvaged a 2-2 draw with Bristol City. She's played two games this week. Her goal was an excellent strike from 20 yards out. Elsewhere in the Women's Super League, the brilliantly named Danielle van der Donk scored a hat-trick as Arsenal twice came from behind to beat West Ham. They're level on points with Birmingham, who beat Reading. Philippe?
Yeah, talking about women's football, another announcement, another step in the right direction. Can announce today that there will be the 2018 will be the first year there's also a Ballon d'Or for women footballers, which is jolly good. It was announced literally a few minutes ago in Paris. And I mean, some of the what's happening, I think, in France, as it is happening everywhere else, is quite spectacular in terms of recognition of the women's game. We've got now 165,000 women who are and girls and women who are playing in French clubs and have a license from the French FA, which is an absolutely unbelievable progression. So it is being, as I said, the Ballon d'Or now. There will be 2018. We'll see the first female Ballon d'Or.
Excellent news. Mm-hmm. Carabao Cup round three midweek. Bring the box on Thursday, Baz.
I sometimes think you think the box is more important than I am.
I'm making no comment officially about that. Pick of the games, Wolves, Leicester, Manchester United, Derby, Arsenal, Brentford, West Ham, Macclesfield, Spurs, Watford and Liverpool, Chelsea. Obviously, no idea what teams they'll put out, but still, enjoy the games. Before the goodbyes and feedback corner, Philippe, you'd like to pay a small tribute to a fallen friend of yours?
Yes, absolutely. Very somber note, and somebody who was very well known within football, very much loved, Ralph Ellis, our colleague. I mean, somebody who did some amazing work for the Football Writers Association, was on a number of papers for a number of time. As late as June this year, he was taking part in a cycling ride to Amsterdam to raise funds to fight for the fight against prostate cancer. And very sadly, Ralph passed away just a few days ago, victim of that dreadful disease.
All our thoughts, obviously, with his friends and family. To feedback corner, and a slight gear change. A lot of love, Barry, for the cow chat on Thursday. You and Jonathan Wilson had a deep discussion.
I was
cows.
So delirious with fatigue that morning that I can barely remember the cow chat.
It's the best thing we've managed to do on the pod, I'll be honest, so far. Well, certainly the one that's gone down with the most excitement.
Okay. I wasn't aware of that.
Also the conversation that has seen producer Jonathan look most despairingly through the glass. This is from M. Parry. Says, as I'm sure the current Mrs. Rushton can back me up, the state of Queensland in Australia has never adopted daylight savings to this day because, and I quote, it will confuse the cows. So there you are. So that means you were right, Barry. Baby news. Andy in Birmingham sent a tweet saying, just waiting for surgery, listening to Football Weekly. I said good luck, thinking it was Andy going into surgery. He wrote back, thank you for your kind words yesterday. Look what the surgery brought. Pod was great in keeping me occupied while waiting for them to take us down to have a C-section. Apparently, Andy said he was very brave. They've gone with Beatrice Rose, not Barry. Yeah. For the name, sad times. Laura Green sent this tweet. Do you ever wonder if you might be doing something that no one else in the world is doing at this very minute? In case you're curious, I'm listening to Football Weekly in early labour in Hawaii. We have no news of names yet, so fingers crossed there is a tiny little Baz walking around Honolulu as we speak. And that'll do for today. So thank you, John. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, Max.
Thank you, yeah. Barry. Thank you, Max.
You're very welcome.
We'll be back on Thursday, and we leave you with the words of Gianni Infantino, our great leader, as read by Philippe Auclair.
Okay, words said in London at a FIFA conference, verbatim. A football player does not become a former football player. He becomes a legend because he's the legend in the eyes of many, many children. And people like me who remain children their whole lives when they see a ball in front of them.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.